Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Once in a while, I see a story that I catch my own eyes, not sent in to me by anybody. But I've done videos about bad judges, bad lawyers, and I can't recall if I've done bad jurors or not, bad jurors. But I found two stories about bad jurors. One is recent, one is about a year old, but they tie together in a very, very strange way. And Scott Peterson's murder convictions to be re-examined according to a court. A court has ordered that Scott Peterson gets at least a court hearing to see if he's entitled to a new trial. And you'll recall that his case was all over the news a few years ago. But the California Supreme Court has already overturned his death sentence. And that's for the conviction back in 2004. So the Scott Peterson trial, it's a few years old now. But the California Supreme Court on Wednesday ordered a review of the convictions. And you'll recall he was convicted of murdering his wife because a juror in the trial failed to disclose that she had been involved in legal proceedings. And during jury selection, they ask you specifically, you know, have you ever had any legal problems? Have you ever been involved in the court system? Ever been charged with a crime? Are you related to any police officers? Do you know any victims of crime? And they do this to try to figure out if you might have some preconceived notions about cases in general. And so the court ordered the state to show why Mr. Peterson's murder convictions should not be overturned on the grounds that the juror number 7, committed prejudicial misconduct by not disclosing her prior involvement with other legal proceedings, including but not limited to being the victim of a crime. And by the way, the story is from the New York Times. Derek Bryson Taylor wrote it. The case will return to the San Mateo County Superior Court to determine if Peterson should be given a new trial. The Los Angeles Times reported that the juror, number 7, had not shared that she was granted a restraining order in 2000 against her boyfriend's ex-girlfriend for harassing her when she was pregnant. A request for comment from Mr. Peterson's lawyer was not immediately returned on Thursday, but the case and the trial drew widespread media coverage, spawned at least one made-for-TV movie, and returned to the spotlight in August when the California Supreme Court overturned his death sentence, that is, of Mr. Peterson's. At the time, the court upheld the convictions, but said that the trial judge made mistakes that hindered his right to an impartial jury during sentencing. The court said, we reject Peterson's claim that he received an unfair trial as to the guilt and thus affirm his convictions for murder. But before the trial began, the trial court made a series of clear and significant errors in jury selection. So the court said prosecutors could again seek the death penalty if he's given a new trial, or if they wanted, they can even have a whole new hearing on that. But Lacey Peterson was a 27-year-old substitute teacher who was 8 months pregnant and was reported missing on Christmas Eve in 2002 from the home she shared with Mr. Peterson in Modesto, California. So he might get a new trial based on a juror not telling the court what appears to be the full truth about questions asked during jury selection. Now, I then was poking around for other stories about jurors and came across this story, again, New York Times by Ed Shanahan. And this is about a year old. In fact, it's almost exactly a year old, October of 2019. After a juror exchanged 7,000 texts, murder verdict is overturned. Murder verdict is overturned. Now, you might say, but Steve, a juror is allowed to text, aren't they? Well, they're not supposed to communicate with anybody about the trial during the trial. And that, of course, is what those texts relate to. A juror's conduct is deemed so bad that a prominent New York doctor who's convicted of killing his wife will get a new trial. So this is one juror misbehaving. They get a new trial out of it. 4 years ago, a jury convicted a doctor in central New York of killing his wife. And that case riveted the Syracuse area. Now, this one did not ring a bell with me. The Peterson trial was national headlines. This one, not so much. But on the day of the verdict, an alternate juror contacted a lawyer for the defendant that led to the revelation that one of the jurors who had voted to convict him of murder had exchanged 7,000 text messages with family and friends during the 3-week trial. Hundreds of texts involved the case, a clear violation of the judge's standard admonition that jurors not discuss the matter until after the trial is over. So when you get called in for jury duty, they question you, which is what got the first juror number 7 in trouble. And then if you pass that selection process and you get seated on the jury, at every step of this situation from the juror's perspective, they get instructions from the judge. The judge will tell you, you know, you're about to get questioned. Here's what you need to do. And you get sworn, by the way. This is all testimony under oath when you're being questioned with juror number 7. But when you get impaneled, you get an instruction that says, you're about to be impaneled for a trial. During the trial, you are not to discuss this trial with anyone for any reason at all, not even amongst yourselves during breaks. Okay? So don't discuss it with anybody. And you'd guess that sending 7,000 texts back and forth about the trial would be breaking that rule. I suspect that the modern court rule, and I have not heard one in the last few weeks, but I suspect that the modern court rule would even suggest, you know, you can't communicate by any means. So when they say don't discuss it, you can't say, oh, I thought texts weren't discussing it. On October 22nd, the New York Court of Appeals, the state's highest court, affirmed an appeals court's decision last year that the conduct by the juror was so bad that the conviction should be set aside and he should get a new trial. The extensiveness and egregiousness of the disregard, deception, and dissembling occurring here leave no alternative but to reverse the conviction. The lawyer on appeal welcomed the ruling. After spending 3 years in prison, the defendant will now be released on bail. They attempted to contact the juror, but she had no comment. The district attorney said that the juror does not face any criminal charges, but the text messages began the day she was picked for the jury, according to documents. Oh, lucky you, her father wrote to her when she told him the news. Make sure he's guilty, he wrote in another text that day. The juror received texts during the trial from one friend who called the defendant scary, and from another expressing surprise that his adult daughter, who was at home at the time of the mother's death and who testified in support of the father, was not a suspect. So they're discussing legal theories via text. Then later, questioned about all of this, the juror lied, doctored some text messages, deleted some, and cleared her internet browsing history, according to court documents. She acknowledged violating the judge's instructions, but did not say why she'd done so. She then claimed that none of this had affected her deliberations. But, you know, this is a very serious problem. So you can imagine, and again, I know people out there who say, well, you know, Steve, but the guy killed somebody. Well, he's going to get put on trial again. And hopefully that trial will straighten that out. Whether he's guilty or not, that jury will determine that. But if, I think the best way to look at this is to ask yourself, if you were on trial, you are the defendant, you are on trial, and you hear the judge give the instructions to the jury. Don't discuss this case with anyone, not even with each other, until you go back to the rooms to deliberate at the close of the trial. And until then, you simply listen, absorb it, keep it in your head. If you later found out, after you were convicted, that one of those jurors had sent or received 7,000 text messages about the trial during the trial, in which people were telling her that you were scary, or saying that you should be convicted, or so on, that would probably upset you. That probably would. So the guy does appear to deserve a new trial. Whether he's guilty or not, I don't know. That'll be up to the jury to decide. But, you know, people say to me, Steve, if you're an attorney and you do criminal defense work and you're getting people off, doesn't that make you feel bad as an attorney? And I always tell people, I say, you know, the job of a defense attorney is not to get their clients off on every single thing, okay? Your job is to do the best you can to defend your client by making the prosecutor prove their case, make them do their job, but then also, and this is the important part, to make sure the process is fair, to do what you can to keep the process fair. So the other side's trying really, really hard to convict your client, and you're there just to make sure that the process stays fair. And without an attorney, it's very, very difficult to do. But that is the job of a good attorney in a defense case. So luckily here, the attorney found out about this and brought it to light, and the guy gets a new trial. Took him a couple of years to get the new trial, but he's getting a new trial. So we'll see what happens. But those are two tales of bad jurors or jurors doing bad things. Questions or comments, put them below. This will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. She had that light about her that turned people around her into moths.